You're listening to the best of the day.
I said you the best.
Halford and Brock.
You know what's a sign that your producer is really dialed into your show? When that producer is posting his Wordle scores in the middle of the Jeff Merrick interview. What are you doing over there?
I was told to do it during and before the show.
By who?
Jason.
I didn't tell you to do that. I said it comes out. I don't even know when the new Wordle is
at
comes
midnight.
Out.
It comes out at midnight.
Okay. Are you sure?
Yes.
I thought we determined that it was a different time.
My timer makes it come out at midnight.
Why?
When it refreshes.
Don't put this on Jason. I don't recall Jason ever saying, hey, Dom, you know when's a good time to do your work?
Verbatim. No. He said verbatim, do it right before the show because you're dumb and you need to spark your brain before the show.
I did that. I remember the dumb part.
Were you still working on it during the show?
No, I just tweeted it out. I just tweeted it out while Merrick was talking.
Oh, okay. Well, congratulations.
It is Ask Us Anything Friday on the Halford and Brough with a little bit of Wordle show. Do we have any that we want to do right away, or do we want to get into the Canucks stuff right away?
There's a good Ask Us Anything here
from
Rager.
Rager.
While Dom was working on his Wordle.
Yep.
I did a little bit of research.
Okay, I haven't done any, so I'm excited. I'm caught off guard.
So I'm going to ask you guys right off the top of your head. Which great player has had the most disappointing surrounding cast and it affected his career potential? I have to think, Rager says, McDavid and Draisaitl are up there now.
Current? Active?
Anytime. Anytime. When you think about all-time greats, and then you're like, ugh, look at their teammates. Yuck.
First one that popped to mind currently was Damian Lillard in Portland, because they're horrible.
I was going to ask, are we doing just hockey or?
Any sport.
All-time. Who's, like, all the guys that never won a Super Bowl, never won a championship. I mean, Dan Marino jumps to mind, but I don't think he was surrounded by terrible players. Yeah.
Mike Trout's a good one.
Mike Trout's a really good one, although he does have maybe the greatest baseball player going
now.
Now he does, yeah. Shohei Ohtani.
Do you want me to give
my best
two from research?
Okay.
Tony Gwynn with the San Diego Padres.
Good one.
And Barry Sanders with the Detroit Lions.
Great one. Good answers. Barry Sanders, probably the right answer. More so than Tony Gwynn.
Who was Tony Gwynn's best teammate?
Gary Templeton. Don't you ever speak ill of Gary Templeton.
And what about Barry Sanders? Who was his quarterback? Rodney Peet? Andre Ware?
He had the lefty, Scott Mitchell. He had him for a while. It was a cascade of bad coaches.
Who was the guy that handed him the ball and went, run, Barry, because I can't throw it?
Scott Mitchell did it for a while. Rodney Peet was in there as well. Bad coaches. You know what? I think Barry Sanders is the right answer. Generational talent. Someone, I guess there must have been the anniversary of him retiring or something or other, but there was the Barry Sanders mixtape making the rounds. And you forget how unbelievably video game he was at the time. Yeah, the jump cuts where you're like, if I tried to do that, I would blow out every joint in my knees and ankles.
Right.
And he did it effortlessly and all the time. Yeah, I think Barry Sanders is the right answer.
I'm not
even going to argue that one.
Aaron on Twitter texted in, Ask Us Anything Friday. When you play beer league, do you wear a cage, a visor, or nothing? I think we've had this one before.
I'm always curious because there's so few guys in the NHL right now that are wearing a visor anymore. Not wearing a visor
anymore. Because they have to now.
Right. So you got grandfathered in, I think it was around 2013, 2014.
Yeah.
And now there's what?
Chara and Getzlaf?
Ryan O'Reilly doesn't wear one. Ryan Reeves doesn't wear one. Yeah. Lucic doesn't wear one, but it's a handful of guys now.
Did you see the fight in Anaheim the other day between Delorier and McDermott?
Yeah.
Did they both have visors on there?
Yeah. And I think that's only because they're too young.
Yeah.
I don't think they were.
Yeah, I don't think they'd choose to wear the visors.
Right.
I love to fight, and I love to be safe about my vision.
Dangerous, yet also safe. Practical, yet also reckless.
So to answer the question, I wear a cage. I was the last one on my team to put the cage on. And it wasn't anything that happened to me that convinced me to put a cage on. It was something that I did out there when my stick came up on a guy. And I didn't knock any of his teeth out, but I definitely got him in the mouth, yeah. And he was bloodied. And I was like, with players like me out here, I should really be putting a cage on.
Yeah. You were the discretionary tale for yourself.
My friend played in, you know, that hockey for the homeless tournament?
That's a street hockey thing, right?
No, it's not. It's a tournament where you're playing real hockey and NHLers, ex-NHLers are kind of dispersed on your team.
Okay, pretty dismissive of ball hockey, but go on.
So my buddy was on Mason Raymond's team, and he said that Mason Raymond wears a full cage out there. And he kind of said it like, can you believe this? Mason Raymond wearing a full cage? I'm like, you're in your 40s. Like, I'm talking to my buddy. I'm like you don't still need to be, like, not wearing a cage because like it's not tough. Like Don Cherry retired retired. He's no longer, you know, giving the advice on stuff. Like you work every day. You've got kids. Like you really want to be bashing out your teeth and spending a whole day in the dentist chair?
I've talked to guys that are like, oh, that the stick blade caught me under my shield and it was like within an inch of taking away my eye. And I'm like, I feel like your eye is a very important thing in the latter half of your life. Like, you're going to need that eye.
For your whole life.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. When you're young, you make youthful indiscretion moves and you pay the price for it, right? But the idea is, as you get older, you make more decisions out of maturity and the fact that you don't want to spend the back half of your life when you got aches and pains and your life gets more difficult because physically you get reduced, right? You don't want to put yourself behind the eight ball by like, I only got one eye now, or, you know, I lost half of my teeth. You don't want to do that later on when you have the brain to say, okay, I should be making smarter decisions. Like, I'm surprised that everyone in your beer league now wears a cage, right? You were the last
on my team, not necessarily in the league.
Okay, but now I'll say this. I have talked to guys that have gone no shield, no visor.
It's awesome.
And it's the greatest feeling on earth. It's like the cold, crisp air is just snapping in your face.
You guys say goalies are nuts, though. We at least all of our real teeth still. I've worn a cage my entire life.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right.
We're not that wild and crazy.
It's because you're soft.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what
So a lot of people have been texting about the question of greatest athlete, worst teammates.
Uh-huh.
People texting in Marcel Dion, and I thought of that one, but then I thought he had great line mates. Like he played what was the name of the line? It was like Kings related.
The Triple Crown line with Dave Taylor and
Charlie Simmer.
Yeah.
Like those guys.
Well, someone's pointing out that like you can't really say it for McDavid because he has Draisaitl.
Well, exactly.
Say it for Draisaitl because he has McDavid.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Felix Hernandez was a good one.
I raised them a
Roy Halladay. Some of those 90s Jays teams were.
But then it's over the duration of their career because then Doc went to Philly and he had a bunch of good teammates around him, right?
And so, that proved that he was on a good team. He could actually do something.
It has to be one of those tales. I keep saying tales, say cautionary tales, discretionary tales. But one of those stories, those tales where the guy spends his entire career mired with a bunch of slugs around him. Felix Hernandez is a good example. And by the time I don't even say the Mariners got good, but they got better than bad. He had nothing left in the tank. He was done.
A few people suggesting Dale Hawerchuk, and I've got time for that.
He went to the playoffs a bunch with Winnipeg, though.
Randy Carlyle was on some of those Jets teams, too. And
yeah.
He won a Norris, didn't he?
He did.
Right?
So the grumpiest Norris winner ever. Actually, that's not true. Chris Pronger won it once. Okay. You wanted to talk about the JT Miller stuff from yesterday. We had Frank Saravalli on the show, and Jason has been lobbying to trade JT Miller for months now. It's his number one thing. He doesn't care about the success of this team, people. He just wants to trade people away. That's house of negativity right there. No. What he's done is looked at this from an objective and logical standpoint. And I think we've gone down the road of this conversation long enough that we don't have to rehash all of the critical talking points. If you can't see the forest from the trees at this point, that's more of a you problem than a Halford and Brough problem. Because
Or you just see things differently. You're not as concerned about the aging of players as I am.
But I leaned into the joke part of this, that he's lobbying to get JT Miller traded.
I am in a way.
Again.
Not because JT Miller, I don't like him as a player, but more like, this guy right now could get you a lot.
Right.
And by the time that I believe the Canucks are going to be the Stanley Cup contenders, I think you could very easily be overpaying JT Miller.
But the point, larger point being is that you can have a conversation and discuss a topic without lobbying for said topic, right? You can look at something objectively. You can bring an idea to the forefront, thoughts and ideas, an exchange of minds. Anyway, we brought this up with Frank Saravalli yesterday. Do we have the audio at the ready here? How long is the clip and what exactly does it entail? Because it was a two-parter from us.
Well, so we have the clip of Jason asking Frank if the Canucks are interested in trading JT Miller. And this is what Frank said. It's about a minute and a half.
I think they are. I think when you look at where this team has been and where they're heading, I think they have to be open to anything. That's really the truth of it. I think in a sense, as the general manager interviews continue on this week and Jim Rutherford hopes to have someone in place by, you know, the February 1st range or first week of February, that I think the plan for a while had been to hold off and before really engaging in conversation with teams about players like Miller that have sort of been, you know, phoning constantly to check in, that I think in some ways, it, you know, that doesn't necessarily need to happen, meaning I do think there's been a lot of smoke there in terms of the conversations. And I think it's certainly been heating up in a way that, is it possible that you could see something before a general manager is in place for the Vancouver Canucks? It is. I think in an ideal world, they'd like to wait and make sure everyone's on the same page. But at the same time, I think if Jim Rutherford gets a deal that he likes, that he's going to pull the trigger.
So we're still getting used to, obviously, new management with the Canucks. And there hasn't been anything yet that has proven that things are going to be way different in Vancouver now, right? Like, there's been nothing because Jim Rutherford hasn't made
a
move. He hasn't,
but consider
he hasn't been
the
here
circumstances.
Long
They've had half their games
no,
postponed.
I know. No.
He's doing this GM search on the side. Apparently, they were doing interviews in person this week. So,
Can I just finish my thought here?
I guess.
We haven't seen a move yet because Jim Rutherford hasn't been on the job much. We haven't been up to the trade deadline yet. But there was a quote yesterday in The Athletic where I perked up because it was something Jim Rutherford said that I don't feel like the previous management group would have ever said at this point in the season. And Rutherford said, I know it's still a long shot to be in the playoffs because there's games in hand. We're still trying to catch up, but we're hanging around, and the players deserve some credit. He called it a long shot for the Canucks to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Could you ever imagine the previous group saying something like that at this point in the season when the Canucks are technically just a few points out of a playoff spot and are playing good hockey?
No, probably not. I couldn't see them doing it because, I mean, the circumstances are entirely different. The thing that, and the nice refreshing thing about Rutherford and Boudreaux is that they've got a clean slate to say and do, and I'm not even joking when I say this, pretty much whatever they want. Because they inherited a situation that was so bad at the time. We talked about this with Boudreaux. You want to try Pettersson on the penalty kill? Okay. You want to run eight guys out there for 30 seconds at a time to address it? Sure. You want to do all new lines, all new combos and trios at forward? Okay, no problem. With Rutherford, he can say anything he wants about this team. If he was to say, I don't think it's a playoff team as currently constructed, great. That's what you were brought in here to do, was to bring an outside perspective and analyze the group. Betting, part of the reason he probably would never say what you're suggesting is because he built the team that was a long shot to be the playoffs. It was his entire 8 years of work. Right. And I think the mentality of that group and the way that they approach things was, don't say the quiet part out loud. Right. Just stick to the messaging, whatever that is. A flawed approach in the end. But that was how they went about their business. I mean, part of this, like, Rutherford can say we're a long shot to make the playoffs because there's no real skin in the game for him to say it. Like, they were a bigger long shot when he got here. Now they're less of a long shot. That's just the reality of the situation. I get what you're saying.
But I also think it suggests some level of autonomy from ownership, too. right? Well, when you're saying in the middle of the season, when you got a bunch of home games coming up, I know we're still a long shot to be in the playoffs, that suggests that he is just speaking honestly right now.
Yeah, I think it's the reality of the situation. And I don't think he needs to sugarcoat anything or protect what he's done in the past. I don't think that he needs to say anything other than exactly what it looks like in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get what you're saying. You're trying to make the juxtaposition that the previous regime would never do this, whereas the new regime is looking at this more critically and saying, hey, we're not currently...
taking a longer-term approach.
Yeah, and in that regard, maybe it does lend credence to the fact that they'll make moves ASAP. Maybe they'll make moves.
Rutherford also said coming in, I'm not trading away first-round draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
Basically said, we're not the Penguins. We're not in this position of trying to win a Stanley Cup in the next year or two, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or not next year, at least. He was saying, like, we need to keep these, like, in Pittsburgh, he said, it was easy, right? Like, we know we're in the window.
Yeah.
We got Gino, and we got Sid, and we got Letang. Do everything you can to try and win a Stanley Cup this year. He said it right off the bat, things are different here. And that was before he even like took his look at the team.
Yeah.
Right? He came in with a different attitude than the previous management. And I would be really curious to know what the conversations between Jim Rutherford and ownership were before the actual hiring took place. Was it like, you know, we played that clip of the Costanza to George Steinbrenner.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, did he give him that shot of realism, basically?
Well, I mean, I would say that that's too far in the past. The real question, I was telling Dom last week, I was like, we got to try and get someone, be it Rutherford or someone from the front office, to say, where are you at with your evaluation of this team now? Because when Rutherford came aboard, he pointed to that 5-game swing through Florida, Carolina, Tampa Bay, etc., as a measuring stick series. But everything's been thrown into arrears since then. Like, I still don't know if he's been able to see enough of this team to accurately gauge what he's got. And if he hasn't, I wouldn't really blame him. Boudreaux pointed out yesterday, I haven't had the same lineup 2 games in a row.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty big indicator that they don't really know exactly what they've got. I get what you're trying to do. You're trying to say, in the limited morsels of Jim Rutherford quotes that we've got about what he might do.
Because he hasn't made a move yet.
No, and how could
he? Like, the only thing he's done, and you could also use this to juxtapose against the previous management group, the plan to beef up the analytics department.
Yeah, I mean, he still doesn't have a general manager.
Nate in PG and Brendan in Nanaimo texted within 2 minutes of each other basically the same question. Nate's question was, what are your guys' thoughts on trading Besser instead of Miller? The next contract for Besser will be bad and is perhaps a more useful player despite the age discrepancy. I'm not sure who he's talking about. Oh, JT is perhaps a more useful player despite the age discrepancy.
Yeah.
Brendan and Nanaimo, can the Canucks not to look to trade Besser instead? I think Besser's future is certainly fair to be debating right now. His next contract... he has some leverage. I know he's still an RFA, but he could technically just do the 1-year arbitration thing, and then he's like, all right, see you later. I'm UFA. You also have to determine, is this a guy that you want to spend significant cap space on? Is this a guy that you believe is an elite goal scorer in the NHL? Is this a guy who you think is good enough to offset the fact that he is not the fastest player on the ice?
There's only 2 guys.
I like Brock Besser as a player. Like, I like both these players, but it's a question of, like, you know, and again, I hate to do this because people always make fun of me for doing this, but, like, Warren Buffett has this great quote, and he goes, price is what you pay, value is what you get.
Mm-hmm. And I think you can apply that to every situation with the Canucks outside of Demko and Hughes. I mean, we've said this, like, 1,000 times. Everything is on the table in terms of future in Vancouver except for Demko and Hughes. And by future in Vancouver, that means getting a contract extension when your current deal is up, or whether or not they're going to flip you to try and address weaknesses on the roster. I mean, I don't know how many different ways you can re-say the same thing, but that's the reality of the situation. It's very cut and dry. It's very obvious when you look at cap friendly, or you look at the current roster construction, or you look at the guy that they brought in to address this situation, right? You don't bring in Jim Rutherford to stand pat, and you don't bring in Jim Rutherford not to make trades. Look at the roster. Look at the age of the guys. It's very cut and dry that there's going to be moves. It's inevitable.
Tim, the principal, texts in, Canucks fans need to get used to the fact that management actually has a plan now. Miller has to go in order to make this team a Stanley Cup contender instead of always just trying to make the playoffs. Things are different now, but we're going to see how different they are over the next little while.
Mm-hmm.
Well, trading Jaro Halak right now, well, obviously not right now.
It's tough. But he's stuck in the U.S.
But let's say you get to the trade deadline and the Canucks are kind of hanging around, but they're not in a playoff position, and he trades Jaro Halak. Or he trades them in the next month or something like that. That would be an admission that making the playoffs isn't all that important this year. Like, it's not something mm-hmm. that they are putting goal number one. If you trade a capable backup and you don't have a backup that you really trust beyond him,
mm-hmm.
and obviously trading JT Miller would be a massive statement.
Right, and it would send reverberations through that room, because Miller's been the best forward all season long, start to finish. He has been. I mean, there's people that we still get texts in all the time that are lobbying for JT Miller to be the captain of the team. I mean, he has really carried the mail all year long. I would look at it right now and I would say deals that you could expect to be made in season, trade deadline deals, are like the Halak and Mott ones, which, all due respect to both guys, they're fringe deals, right? They're not core pieces. They're not going to fundamentally alter the future of the team. That's why we don't spend a ton of time talking about it. I mean, I heard the Canucks in the Afternoon guys talking about what
which
they...
team are you talking about?
We're running about this?
Or which show are you talking about? Canucks in the Afternoon?
No, it's what I call Canucks Central.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's more Canucks in the evening, isn't it?
We've had this debate before. When do you consider the afternoon to end and the evening to start? I say 6 o'clock.
When 5 p.m.
Their show is 4 to 7.
When the 6 o'clock news comes on, that's when I feel like the afternoon and the day is over and the night begins.
I'm a 5 p.m. guy for the evening.
What about you guys?
It's called afternoon drive, so I'm going to stick with afternoon.
Did you even listen to what I just said?
Yeah.
That was not an answer remotely close to the question. I said, what time does the afternoon end and the evening begin?
With relation to the show.
So what time?
No, but just in your life, dog.
Take
yourself out of the radio station for 5 seconds.
It's hard.
Is it when Wordle comes out? Is that it?
Yeah.
What time of the day does the afternoon end?
It's when the sun goes down, which is about 3:30 these days.
No, it's
4:30. No. The evening does not start at 3:30. Damn it, you guys. You need to get your live.
You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you the best.
The best. Simply the best.
Halford and Bruff.
Welcome to Kelowna, California. West Coast.
Yeah. Kelowna, baby. Best place in the world right here.
Kelowna.
Hey, 8:30 on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford, Bruff, Sportsnet 650. This really is the crown jewel of musical selections, because not only does it invoke a certain energy with the listeners, it is portable to the podcasts because it's unlicensed music. Whatever this guy's name was, Danny Diamond D.
Dalla D,
that was it. He never took the step to license this. And that's when Halford and Bruff pounced and made it an anthem for the show. You are listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. This show is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. I mentioned that song, Kelowna, California, for you, is portable over to Apple, Google, Spotify, all the podcasts. Dom, you had a What We Learned /PSA about the podcast, is that correct?
Yes, now with Spotify, never miss an episode of the Halford and Bruff Show. Simply tap the little bell icon,
smash that bell
on our show page, and you will get a notification every time we post an episode, so you never miss an edition of Halford and Bruff.
# bell, let's subscribe.
That's coming up, by the way.
I know,
that's going to be a savage
day.
Yeah,
I'm aware. Someone asked with regards to, our past employer and our tenure. Someone wanted to know, morning H&B. Hi. I've been a big fan of you two since the Curtain Blog days. Could you explain how your radio career got started back in the day? Well, it did start back when TSN 1040 was Team 1040. That's how old we are.
Mm-hmm.
We would go in very dutifully. It was like a Tuesday or Wednesday weeknight. And we'd go into the studio just for one very brief 10 to 12 minute hit back on the old Price and Tomlinson show,
yeah,
which used to be in the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we got our first foray into radio. Then they said, you guys aren't terrible at this.
Would you like to work for free on the weekends?
Sunday, 9 a.m. That was our first ever time slot.
Yeah.
We
just worked out the kinks, and we're still working through them. That's how it started, though.
Yeah, that's how it began.
That was the Curtain Blog, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a producer. I forget his name now, but I think he worked overnight a graveyard shift at a restaurant and then came in. And
Corey Basso?
No, it wasn't Corey Basso. And then he came in and did our show. And to say he was not enthused would be putting it mildly. But he had to work with us. We had no idea what we were doing.
But I think as soon as we started doing radio, we realized that we really liked it.
Yeah, it was fun.
And that it's easier than writing.
Two things that are very true. The third was that we were not very good at it. That also holds true to this very day.
Can I ask you guys a question about your start?
Well, we have to let you know.
When did you...
No.
Like, how and when did you guys pick whose name went first?
That's a good question.
I think it just sounded better, Halford and Brough.
Oh, well, Brough and Halford. You know what it was? When we came to do the gig full time, when we left NBC, the Curtain Blog thing was done.
Right.
We couldn't call it Curtain Blog Radio anymore because it had been on the shelf for too long and no one knew what it was.
Okay.
And all the shows at 1040 had the name and name title,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I think it was because I normally speak first coming out of break.
No, it wasn't. It was just the cadence of the...
You remember.
Have a massive ego and I don't have an ego. So I was just like, yeah, whatever. It sounds better, Halford and Brough than Brough and Halford.
Because inevitably it was just going to be the Halford show. So we're like, it's easier to chop that part off at the end as opposed to the beginning of it.
Another text in. So you guys were the Quadrelli and Faber.
Yeah.
1040. Yeah. Like I think Quads and Faber have futures.
Yeah. I think they got something here.
In
I really
career.
Do.
Like, and I want to latch on to their youth.
Which one of you is Quads and which one of you is Faber is my question.
Well, who's smartest?
Well,
who's smartest? Quads? Then I'm Quads. You're Faber.
From what I understand, Faber's the money guy, and Quads is the smart one.
Who's the money guy? Was he financing it?
Yeah, he like runs finances. He runs all show ops.
What do you mean the finances of the
like,
show?
Like he brings sponsor dollars. He's the one that like it's his business.
I love how you made it sound like he's the capo of the crew. He's my biggest earner.
He's the CFO.
He runs the sports book.
Like
he does the no show jobs at the construction site.
He's got like a securitized debt obligation that he's selling off to the Norwegians or something like that. He's the finance guy.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to put it.
He's stealing fiber optic cables from the Esplanade project, that kind of thing. I think they got a bright future in the biz. I like them a lot. They got some real potential there.
So let's do some what we learned. I want to mention this one because it got a lot of play nationally yesterday, and that is that it sounds like, or not sounds like, the Montreal Expos, Tampa Bay Rays, sister cities shared team idea is officially dead.
Yes.
And I feel bad because I know there's a lot of people in Montreal that had high hopes of this plan.
Charles Bronfman being one of them. He was visibly shaken yesterday.
Our friend Arpon in Montreal. Like there's a lot of people that are super into sports in Montreal that like have the fondest memories of the Montreal Expos growing up. And I never really quite understood it because
you didn't live it.
I kind of lived it, but I went to an Expos game once at the Big O and there was like 5,000 people there. And I'm like, this isn't great. This isn't awesome at all. Like this is terrible. And when that idea came out that they're going to share a baseball team between Tampa and Montreal, two cities in different countries.
Yes.
I was like, what kind of idea is this? And I eventually started to understand it a little bit from the Montreal side in that if you had a full-time team in Montreal, you got to build a dome stadium.
Correct.
Right? And that's more expensive than if you had a team that was only going to play there in the summer and you could build a smaller open-air stadium.
Okay.
I get that, but I still felt like this is a very dumb idea and I don't see this happening. A team being shared between an American city and a Canadian city, it just that had nothing in like Tampa and Montreal, they're like the same thing, right?
Put it
like,
this way,
it was weird.
Put it this way, my reaction to the news yesterday that the deal was dead was, oh, people thought that was actually going to happen, and apparently Montreal did, and apparently Montreal was really far down the road. Again, this is probably ignorance on my part because I didn't pay enough attention to the story, but I'm with you. It seems so illogical and harebrained and desperate. And yeah. I know people tried to spin that as being, oh, it's unique and innovative. I'm like, but it also sounds impossible. I just didn't think that it was ever going to happen. So when Manfred spiked it, I was like, okay, well, this was the inevitable result. But then we're getting all, and I mean, a lot of it was from back east at Sportsnet. I mean, I guess there was a different sense of optimism.
Well, Stephen Brunt sounded like downright depressed about it.
And I guess part of that had to do with the fact that there was such a romanticized notion of baseball coming back to Montreal that they were willing to accept it under any circumstances, mm-hmm. even if it was this weird Frankenstein-esque franchise.
And you could sell me on the summer games idea as well.
Yeah, and I guess Montreal, and I didn't realize this until listening to Brunt on the broadcast yesterday, a lot of people feel like this was their last real chance of getting a team and that it's dead now. And I was like, well, why? You know, you could always come back to the table with a new idea. You guys have been trying to get a hockey team in Quebec City for the better part of 3 decades, and it doesn't seem to ever die. Why would this die now? But he made it sound like
I think it's just so expensive to build a stadium there.
Do you hear the quote from the Rays owner? He was livid in his press conference.
Yeah, he was.
He was very angry.
What's his name? Steven Soderbergh?
Stuart Sternberg.
Close enough.
Almost Steven Strasburg. He said, partial seasons are going to be the wave of the future in professional sports.
What?
Attaboy.
The wave of the
future. The wave of the future?
Yeah.
So where are the Canucks going to play? Who are the Canucks? Who would you want to split a team
Bellingham.
With?
Bellingham.
Hawaii, yeah.
Can we do that?
Cabo. The Cabo Canucks.
Palm Springs is getting an A.
Well, I know.
Team.
It sucks that Palm Springs has a team now because that would have been a perfect place to go.
Were you thinking of Carl Soderberg, the hockey player?
No, I think Steven he was thinking Soderberg, it.
The director.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Stephen Sondheim.
Stephen Sondheim's another one. It has to have the alliteration. Didn't he just die?
I don't know.
I think he did. It had to have the SS thing, right? Carl Soderberg wouldn't work, but kudos for that interjection.
Because I thought, where'd you get Soderberg from?
Okay, let's move on.
No, let's keep
Mike
this.
Mike
no,
let's keep this going.
Let's keep this going.
Yeah,
this is gold.
Dom's on a roll. Ask us anything from Sam,
Carl, and Lenny,
Manitoba. Sam, who is the funniest person on and off the air in the local media? Well, obviously it's us, but I think the funniest guys, like the locally, that I will hang out with and just laugh and laugh and laugh.
Laddie's pointing to himself and Dom's pointing to himself.
And I think, Halford, you would agree with me on this, are Shorty and Murph.
Yep. Let's put it this way. It's always a good time.
Yeah.
When you're going out. Very rarely are you not having a good time.
That day we had in Philly when we went to the Eagles game, and it was so cold in that stadium and just miserable.
Yep.
And then Murph at halftime is like, should we get out of here?
We go to
and I was like, oh my God, thank God.
A place with warmth and food and televisions and booze. I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. So then we went. We put in a shift that day, as the kids like to say.
Batch had a good day that day too. You should ask him about it
one day. Batch was having a shift too. No, that's
well documented day.
Yeah. Shorty and Murph are probably, I think that's the right answer. Shorty and Murph are the top of that list.
But there's a lot of funny people.
Yeah,
except Durant.
They're asking for the best.
Corey the Carpenter, this is a good ask us anything. Would you rather go into space or deep sea scuba diving?
Ugh.
Both of those terrify me.
Neither. I guess if
you have darkness. Oh, the darkness.
You have to pick one.
I know. Maybe the deep sea, if only because I guess claustrophobia doesn't become an issue because technically you're not closed in. You can move.
Oh, you're closed in.
No, you're not. You can move freely in the water as far as I
know what you're closed in by? hundreds of meters of the ocean.
That's the
also,
problem.
Also, you're in a submarine. I don't think there's...
You're in a submarine.
You're not
yes,
a
you
submarine.
You're in
a,
you're
deep sea scuba diving.
You're scuba diving. You have the freedom to move about.
There's no submarine
I would
in this
never,
text.
Because I would never go in a submarine.
Guys, the pressure underwater is so crushing that you need a submarine.
But it says scuba. I don't think you wear a scuba outfit in a submarine.
I think the question is
it's like wearing two condoms.
I think
it's too
deep
much.
As humans can go. They're not talking about like submarine.
Oh,
depth.
Then that's boring. Then you got to go to space.
Okay, but you can't make up the question. The question is the question.
The question's flawed.
We have to answer. It's not flawed. It's very straightforward.
Laddie, could you turn Dom's mic off? Just fake like a technical issue. Like, oh no, it doesn't work.
Now, were you guys thinking of Carl Soderberg in that last instance?
Ask us anything, Jason. Spring is around the corner. Do you have any big plans for the lawn this year?
Can you have big lawn plans?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Unless you're going to tear it out and start it all over again. Your lawn is good.
We have had, you might call it a rebuild or a retool of the lawn in the last few years. And I feel like this is the year to step on the gas. I just hope it goes better for my lawn than, for example, like I don't want to sign Kyle Okpozo.
Right.
And they'd be like, it's time to go, Sabres fans.
Fair enough. Andrew Ladd. You don't want to Andrew Ladd your lawn. Ladlon, they call it.
The one thing that will continue to stress me out, though, is the part of the lawn that is out front by the public sidewalk where dogs continue to urinate on it.
Tough. You
and
can't
it
really
leaves...
do anything about that.
What do you guys think?
Don't do it.
About a sign.
No, don't do
about
it.
About a sign that says, please don't. Like, here's the thing. A lot
You're
of people...
inviting the neighborhood kids to do something to the sign or the lawn at that point.
True, which is why I'm bringing it up. But a lot of people think that the biggest problem is the dogs who go number two. It is a problem if they don't clean it up, obviously. But like for the lawn aficionados, the worst is when you get the burn marks on the lawn. And it just drives me crazy.
Texters have pointed out, I believe it's the female dogs that have certain...
Yes.
Chemical composition of their urine?
A higher
is that the
pH level?
Yeah,
maybe, yeah.
But I feel like I've got, like, the...
He finally weighs in with some useful information, and it's about dog pee.
But checks
the,
out.
That but the back out. Lawn...
Right, I'm eclectic.
Though. You're right, though.
But the back lawn, I feel like it's step on the gas time.
It's go time.
It's to the point where, like, I don't want anyone on the lawn. Like I said, oh, I wanted to take the lawn, so, like, have a nice lawn, because I remember, you know... We had a great backyard, and we played all sorts of sports on it, and it was a lot of fun, but I don't want them on the lawn.
I would like you to go Major League Baseball groundskeeper style and have, like, very intricate designs carved into the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some sort of, like...
Diamonds.
Cross pattern. Yeah, thatching, if you will.
Or like a special message, like, you know when they have, like, a message?
Oh, yeah.
And the message could be, like, please stay off the lawn.
Right. You could carve a logo in there, or no dogs allowed. One of the two,
You change the direction you mow every time, correct?
Oh, of course.
Like, you'll do horizontal, vertical. No.
Come on,
okay.
Hey,
rookie.
Yeah.
The veteran game here.
It's not a big lawn, though, so it's not a big lawn.
That was a good question, though.
Chef Swagger.
If the answer was no, I'd be like, rookie.
Chef Swagger from Hell's Kitchen, what we learned, Gene Principe needs a haircut. What are you talking about, man? That is the best hair in hockey going right now. That is the best thing about hockey in Edmonton right now is Gene Principe's hair.
Yeah.
It is awesome.
It is growing. I don't even know how to describe it.
I loved him in Goodfellas.
What was that guy's name?
He ended up in the meat locker.
He did. It wasn't Joey Roastbeef. What was the guy's name? He was the one that bought his wife the pink Cadillac.
No.
Or was
no,
that Joey Roastbeef?
No, he was the one who bought the fur coat.
No, I think he got it backwards. I think Joey Roastbeef bought his wife the fur coat. And then
Frankie
bought the pink Cadillac.
He's the
Frankie
one.
Bought
and then
the
he was
pink
the one
Cadillac?
Hanging.
He's
and
the
it
one
was
hanging
in
the
meat
freezer.
Yeah.
No, you're wrong though, because the couple ended up dead in the pink Cadillac.
I'm looking at
a
picture.
Oh, no, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's right. He's right.
Right.
It was the fur coat.
Right.
De Niro comes and takes it away from her.
Yeah, while Layla played.
Yes, that's right.
It was on the radio, too. Which would
ask us, what you want to do some sports? I'm sure that there's some old crotchety guy yelling at his radio right now. Ask us anything. If you were to start a franchise, who would you rather? On defense, Victor Hedman or Cale Makar? Easy answer, Cale Makar. You get the youth factor.
Yeah, but is it okay? I always want to ask, like, are you getting them at?
You're getting them right now.
This
today.
Stage, or are they both?
January 21st, 2022. You're getting them right now today. You get a new franchise. Stuart Sternberg has given you
mm-hmm.
the rights to a new franchise.
What about if they're both the same age? Like, you bring Cale Makar up a few years and bring Hedman back.
I can't. This is this mythical thing where we're aging poor Cale Makar. I can't do that. I can only go with what I know. And right now, it makes more sense to have the Norris-caliber defenseman that's younger as opposed to the Norris-caliber defenseman that's older.
But overall, what would you prefer? I don't know what... Here's the thing.
Here's a question.
I don't know enough about Cale Makar's defensive game.
Doesn't even matter.
But all I know is that... Well, I think it does matter. Right?
He's so good.
Like, I would have taken...
the entertainment value.
Okay, remember when Erik Karlsson looked like he could do no wrong?
Yeah.
I would have still taken a better two-way defenseman over Erik Karlsson.
Okay, that's fair.
Right?
I
just don't know enough about Makar's defensive game.
Right. He just looks like unreal.
But those defensemen that can play in all situations, I'm talking about Victor Hedman, I think the best example over the last 10, 15 years is Duncan Keith. Like, he was amazing in all situations.
I will say this. If you were to say, pick a team right now, an expansion team, to win a Stanley Cup this season, I'd go Hedman over Makar. But if it was about starting a franchise where you're going to have 10, 15, 20 years, presumably in charge before they fire you, I would say take Makar.
Text in, are you cat people or something? First of all, yes, I am. And the text continues, you can't control where your dog pees. Build a fence if you're that into your grass.
Ah.
First of all, I have a fence.
Yeah, that's not a bad suggestion. A fence, the problem
no,
with the sign.
No, but the fence, there is a fence. There's the boulevard grass, though. Someone texted in and suggested mulch. I might do that. I might mulch it.
Okay. But the sign, I'm mostly talking about anything to avoid putting up a sign.
And first of all, you can control where your dog pees. It's called a leash. Have a well-behaved dog. Train your dog. Now I'm going to get it from the dog.
Do you
people.
Do you own that
you think
piece
the horse people
of
were
grass,
angry?
Jason?
What do you mean?
Like, is it part of your property?
On one side, I think it is. But yeah, it's complicated. But I do it for the neighborhood to enjoy. And the neighborhood enjoy the neighbor. Like, in these pandemic times,
it's for the people.
We need uplifting things, and I think a well manicured lawn is one of those things.
The neighborhood dad.
Brad in Coldstream with an Ask Us Anything, a very optimistic Ask Us Anything. If Spencer Martin shows well tonight and on Sunday, does that open up or doesn't that open up the opportunity to trade Halak to the Oilers? I would be very leery about making any assessment of a 26-year-old minor league journeyman who might come up and perform well in one or two games. That is what is known as a small sample size.
Yeah.
The only thing that you're going to glean out of this weekend is if he can't do the job. If he comes in and he gets skunked, that's an indication that, okay, he's not going to figure this out. But if he, let's say he plays out of his mind tonight and makes a bunch of saves and they don't have the book on Spencer Martin
mm-hmm.
and he gets a win, you can't really draw any conclusions from that. There's a reason that he's 26 and he's played three NHL games.
Although the one thing that the Canucks are going to have to consider at some point is they're going to need a backup goalie for next season.
Sure.
Right. I don't think it's going to be Halak.
No, but
it could theoretically be Spencer Martin. We'll see. We've seen goalies have weird development curves. Look at Jack Campbell in Toronto.
Yep, that's true. And I mean Jacob Markstrom here.
Where was Spencer Martin drafted? Laddie, was he a fairly highly regarded goalie? And don't forget, for goalies, if you're taken in the second or third round, you're fairly highly regarded.
He was a third round pick.
Spencer Martin was the 63rd overall pick in the 2013 draft. Third round. That's pretty high for
him. Yeah, he had a pretty decent OHL career. He played with Mississauga. There was some tenure there that gave him some clout as a prospect. So I still think, like Kevin Woodley said it on the air yesterday, there's something there with Spencer Martin. He's only 26.
This one's from Jay in Delta. It's a What We Learned. Hashtag WWO What We Learned. Garnett Hathaway just made my Christmas card list. He, of course, is talking about Garnett Hathaway taking out Brad Marchand yesterday. A big win for the Bruins over the Caps, but a huge loss for the Bruins. Did you see after the hit, which, by the way, Bruce Cassidy called cheap, Hathaway got 2-minute minor for interference and tried to celebrate a goal. And when he jumped up, he screamed in pain and sat back down because he did his shoulder. He then left, exited the bench entirely for the third period. Bees come back and win. There was also a gigantic hit from Tom Wilson on Anton Bleed. Did you see that one?
I didn't know.
Oof. It was clean. No penalty on the play. No retaliation in the immediacy because it was a clean hit. But he so they lost Bleed and Marchand yesterday. We don't have any update on what's going on with Marchand, but needless to say, that would be a huge, huge loss for the Bruins.
Have we ever asked this question? What is the best hit in Canucks history?
Yeah, I did. Well, not quite, but I did back in the Curtin Blog days. I ran what was the best hit in NHL history.
Okay, what about Canucks history?
Well,
though?
The one that made the list and got the furthest.
Wait.
There was
okay,
two.
I'm thinking of two.
Yeah.
Willie Mitchell on Jonathan Toews.
No,
out of the penalty
shockingly.
Box. And there was another one where Lyndon put a guy through the glass.
Yeah, the playoffs against St. Louis '96. I want to
say. Wasn't it the Jets?
Scott Norton.
No, it wasn't the Jets.
You know what? The one that advanced the furthest in the greatest NHL hit of all time by a Canuck was Pavel Bure on Shane Chirla.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And I really...
I didn't think of that one because it was so illegal.
It was a decapitation more than a hit. But it went unpenalized in the game. And you know what the fine was for Bure for that hit? From then,
$500 or something like that?
Yeah. Then NHL disciplinarian Brian Burke said, that hit where you nearly killed Shane Chirla... $500.
What is it now? I know we probably discussed this before. But
if he does that hit now, yeah, it's a minimum 20-game suspension. The fine with his salary, I don't know. You'd have to extrapolate that out. But, I mean, that is... It is... When you watch it, the scene play out, because he gets hit about three or four times in the previous sequence, and then there is zero attempt to do anything other than try and end Shane Chirla. That was it, right? I mean,
didn't Berkey almost say like, "Well, Bure had been, you know, taking all sorts of abuse the entire series, so it's kind of like
put it this way,
Chirla deserved it."
To give you an idea of the
hockey's
time,
changed a little bit.
To give you an idea of the culture and the time, Don Cherry put that in his Rock'em Sock'em video, and he's like, "Good to see one of the Russians finally standing up for himself."
Mother of all elbows.
Everyone was like that was the understanding. Was he? No one was going to take care of him except himself, and he did
it. He finally broke this poor Russian kid.
Yeah, it was amazing.
To the point where he almost ruined another guy's life. That's
Chris, that was the biggest hit.
Chris and Langley suggest that the best hit is, I think he's got this one wrong, well, for a number of reasons, because it says Bertuzzi on Chelios. Did he mean Chelios, or wasn't that McInnes?
McInnes. That, along with Scott Mellenby's kids giving everybody the flu, series against St. Louis.
St. Louis, the Blues cellos were never the same.
No, they were not. Okay, we're up against it for time. We only got a minute left. Do you have any other ones you want to do right away, or do you want to just...
No, I'm just honestly...
Fade to black here.
I'm looking forward to the sports weekend. It's going to be very interesting from the Canucks' perspective to see if they can get anything out of these next two games, considering the lineup that they're going to have. They should start getting some reinforcements off the COVID list next week, but these at least next two games against Florida and St. Louis, both of them, they're back at Rogers Arena, and I'm sure they'd have hoped to have been at better strength than they're going to be after spending so much time on the road and having so many home games postponed. We'll see what they can do. You know, if they can gut out some results, maybe get a few of these games to overtime or the shootout, I think that would be a victory for the weekend. We've also got all sorts of NFL playoff action, so I hope everyone enjoys the weekend.
We got to get out of here for now, but we will be back on Monday. Signing off, I have been Mike Halford. He has been Jason Bruff. He's been Nephew Dom, and he's been Laddie. This has been the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.